Lori, can you put that up on the screen with yours?
I think I can, but then we're going to go right into presentations, and that won't be able to put more on as presentation on. I did send it to you, Dana.
I have it.
Can you? Okay, yeah. Only because we're going to have a presentation. After that, we can.
I just meant for the general public. I have it.
Okay. Well, David, if you want to go ahead and get started, I think we've got Adam, Cole, and Steve, and we'll be back soon. I'm very confident about it.
Yeah. All right. So we'll come back from closed session. No action was taken, so we are reconvening at 4:09. Please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Public comments. All right, hearing none, we will go to our reports. So 9.1, the Every Student Succeeds Act, Title I presentation from Milana.
Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is well. It's nice to see you, Dana. I haven't seen you in a while. I'm going to go ahead and do a screen share and put up my presentation. If I should do that well.
Okay, you should be good to go, Milana.
Okay. Okay, do you see it? Because I, for some reason, don't see it on my...
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, so I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to provide you with a brief overview of the Every Student Succeeds Act, the Comprehensive Support and Improvement, and Title I. I know you're all well versed on federal school improvement and funding, so I will do a very brief overview. So the Every Student Succeeds Act is the main federal law for K-12 general education, and its intent is to close the achievement gap by providing all children significant opportunity to receive a fair, equitable, and high-quality education. A school can be designated for comprehensive support and improvement if all of the dashboard indicators are red, all but one are red, all are a combination of red and orange, and five or more where the majority are red. The graduation rate for the school is less than 68%, averaged over 2 years. Schools identified for comprehensive support and improvement are required to do a needs assessment, consult with their stakeholders, and write a plan that includes evidence-based goals and services to address how they will improve the area of student achievement. Concerning the use of comprehensive support and improvement funds, it is specified that all use of funds must be necessary and reasonable. The CSI plan includes evidence-based strategies and services that are based on the needs assessment of the school. And because CSI funds are an annual allocation, any staff hires can only be on a temporary status. The disallowable activities and costs are based on not hiring permanent staff, supplanting existing effort and funding, any equipment or furniture that would be for administrative or personal use, food, space rental, or payment for memberships in professional organizations. For schools that are designated for comprehensive support and improvement, they will be bringing their plans to their board of directors for approval. Title I is a federal program that grants funds to supplement schools with high concentrations of low-income students, the same students who qualify to receive reduced or free school lunches. Title I funds are allocated to school districts based on federal census poverty data and allocated to schools based on numbers and percentages of students in poverty. To qualify for Title I allocation, the minimum eligibility low-income student count for the school is approximately a total of 24 low-income students. For our charters, the number of eligible students are at that number or exceed that number. Title I Part A funds are used to improve basic programs operated by the school through consultation with teachers, parents, and other staff, and focus on evidence-based strategies that close the achievement gap. A parent and family engagement policy is required for schools that receive funds under Title I Part A. The school parent and family engagement requirements involve parents in consultation in the planning and the creation of the school plan and a parent and family engagement policy that is approved by the board of directors. The policy includes timely information about Title I, a description and explanation of the curriculum used, opportunities for regular meetings, parents' right to request information concerning teacher qualifications, and the school parent contact policy. For schools that are receiving Title I funds, they will be bringing their plans and policies to their board for approval. The California Department of Education recommends that direct funded charter schools consider the following criteria when approving activities or expenditures supported with Title I Part A funds. The activity expenditure is aligned to meet the challenging state academic content standards. The activity expenditure is an evidence-based educational strategy. The activity expenditure is reasonable, necessary, and allocable cost to the program, and Title I Part A funds supplement and do not supplant funds. And I also wanted to add that for our schools that will be accessing Title I, it will be the first year that we'll be doing that, and so we will be designated as targeted assistance. So schools that will be accessing Title I Part A funds will be sharing their plans and policies with their board of directors as well. So this concludes my presentation. It's brief. The school directors will be sharing specific information with their board of directors if comprehensive support and improvement pertains to their school or if they will be accessing Title I funds. Thank you, and if you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
This is Kelly. I missed that last part. My apologies. Why are the schools eligible? Why do we qualify for APSI?
I'm sorry. So we have schools that will, the reason I'm doing the presentation is because we do have schools that will be, that have been designated as comprehensive support and improvement. And we do have some schools that will be accessing Title I funds this year. And for schools that will be accessing it next year.
So they're qualified under graduation, or they're qualified?
I'm sorry, yes. And the directors who are designated for comprehensive support and improvement will be sharing more information about that. But yes, our schools have been identified. The schools that have been identified based on graduation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, Moana.
You're welcome.
Thanks, very well done. Thank you.
Thank you. I know you guys have heard this a few times today, so I appreciate your still giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. We are going to move on to 9.2, the California Dashboard 2019 presentation by Gretchen.
Okay, I'm going to move this over to Gretchen. Give me 1 second. I'm sorry.
You got it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Gretchen, where are you? For some reason, I don't see Gretchen on here.
She would be at 949 area code.
I found her.
Okay.
I'm on with my computer, so my name should be on there.
Yep.
I'm sorry, you guys. Oh, that's Kurt.
So if you hover over me, Moana, it should say more.
Yeah, I'm hovering over you, but it keeps kicking over to Kurt.
Oh.
Okay, hold on. There you are. Done.
And then I think
I... There you go.
Share.
Did that work?
Yeah, it's just all override you.
Oh, Moana.
Okay. So I did it better last time. I apologize.
Good. No, we're learning as we go.
Sort of like a bell curve, right? You get better the first, you know, the, as you go, and then it starts to go back downhill a little bit. So I hear you. So to that point, I know it's kind of like Goldilocks. Steve has seen the whole presentation. David has seen some of the presentation, and Kelly has seen none of the presentation. But that being said, I know this is Kelly's world. So I think I'll just, you know, kind of go fairly briefly and just explain what the presentation is. So not all of our board members have quite the background that maybe this group does. So I just put this presentation together to kind of remind everybody what the dashboard is for, and kind of the indicators that it represents. I also wanted really to point out that we are on top of what is happening with the dashboard. So I have shared, you know, some of the changes that are happening, such as the change in how participation rate is going to be calculated for those who do not attend, you know, that we're aware that there is now a combined 4- and 5-year graduation rate. We know that we now have English learner progress indicators with color on our dashboard, although I guess that's a moot point for Sonoma because they're brand new, so they're really going to be starting from scratch this year. Well, actually, they're not even going to be starting from scratch this year. So for this team, they're not going to have data for a long time. So that was it, and again, we wanted to point out, we know that state testing has been canceled, so that's, as I just said, really going to kind of put a delay to any dashboard data for Sonoma, and as well as, you know, probably some of the chronic absenteeism and some of that other data that is not going to be very usable this year. So that's really kind of the goal. You can look at this presentation more on your own time. I'd be happy to answer any questions for anybody who has them, either now or one-on-one later. But I think I'll just let Christine go unless anybody has any questions for me.
Anybody have any questions? Kelly or Steve, I'm good. Thanks, Gretchen.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. Thanks, Gretchen.
Cool.
Kelly, any questions for Gretchen?
I was talking with my mute button on. No, I'm good. Thank you for the presentation.
Sure. All right.
All right. So this will be 9.3. California Pacific Charter School Sonoma Achievement Presentation by Christine.
Awesome. Thank you. Gretchen, I think you need to make me the host, and then we'll be all set to go. While Gretchen's doing that, I guess I'll start off with a couple of announcements. We are up to about 255 students, which is awesome. We're actually at capacity. We don't have any more room. Our teachers are full, so that's really exciting. That's an exciting place to be. I wish we did have more room. We have some students who are on the wait list who want to get in, especially in this time. There's some students who feel like their district aren't responding to the distance learning call as well as they would like them to, and so we do have a list of students who would like to be in our program, but like I said, we just don't have enough seats. So we are on a waiting list, which is really exciting. We also are one of probably very few schools who has remained open. We've had no interruption to our educational offerings during this COVID situation. We have loosened up a little bit on, I don't want to say our policies. Our policies remain the same. However, we're being a little bit, we rewrote our attendance warnings and things like that because we know that families are, this is unprecedented. These are, you know, kind of uncharted waters here that we're in. So, you know, while we want to be a sense of normalcy for families, we also don't want to elicit more stress in an already stressful time. We have seen an uptick in requests for laptops and Wi-Fi hotspots. So we're meeting those needs. We're meeting the needs of the students in our community, and we're just really, really proud about that. I was able to collaborate and provide some assistance to ACSA. We've been really involved with ACSA this year, and I got to kind of write a little article. I know Kelly got to see the draft of that, and so that was published in an EdCal article a couple weeks ago for ACSA. And then I've also, with the assistance of Erin's on the call, she's done a pretty incredible job helping to collect resources from our teachers.
to curate a best practices for online with a ton of examples. And so I've already shared that with one district, and it's my plan by next week to share it with our chartering districts and any administrators who are looking for additional resources in this time. So we know we have really the best folks out there, and so we're kind of sharing what we know. And that's really exciting. So I wanted to just start off by giving some of those updates. And I know all of you got the board updates, so you know kind of what's going on. But I thought those were some pretty big highlights just in light of what we're all going through. So with that, I will share my screen, and we'll get right into our achievement data. So for the California dashboard, performance is based on two factors, your current year results and whether results improved from the previous year. As a new school, California Pacific Charter Sonoma doesn't have any of these dials, so we're relying on kind of some internal data to get an idea of where we stand so that we can project next year. Again, because of this whole pandemic, we have no idea what is going to become of the dashboard for next year. I think that remains to be seen, but we can at least take a look at where we're at and identify some areas of need, areas of focus, so that when we do test, hopefully again next year, and when the dashboard really does start to reflect some of our data, probably in 2021, we'll have already done some of the work. We're not going to wait to see results and then make changes. So right here you'll see English, in English Language Arts, we administer a diagnostic test. This is for our 3rd through 8th graders. So you can see we tested about 80% of our students, and you can see that quite a lot of our students, upwards of 55% or so, are below grade level in language arts and reading. So, and conversely, you can see that we have some students who are above grade level, right, about 30-35%. So we tend to really attract kind of the polar ends of the spectrum, which makes sense because folks are looking for a reason, right? If it ain't broke, we'll fix it. So I think that there's a lot of students for whom school, you know, traditional school really works. But we're seeing, you know, some students where it didn't work because they're really not having their needs met because they're on the lower end, or maybe they're on the higher end, maybe they're not being challenged. So taking a look, but noticing that our students are below grade level, and we certainly have a lot of work to do. Again, these diagnostics are taken at the beginning of the school year or when the student enrolls. And you can see, and then in high school, we definitely need to improve the number of students that are being tested, and I can address that a little bit later in this presentation because we do have a new position that I believe will be assisting a lot with this. So we don't test enough of our students, but the ones that are testing, you can see, are very significantly below grade level in this area. And then in math, same thing, our elementary and middle school kids are testing at a pretty high rate. But you can see in math, almost all of them are below grade level, 88%. That's quite a lot. So we have a lot of work to do in math. And our math scores historically in our other charters have trended lower. And that remains the case. You know, students just are falling behind in math. And we're inheriting them this way. I mean, our students are all brand new this year. None of these scores had anything to do with CalPAC. This is how they came in. We tested about a third of our math students in math, and about 67% of them are behind grade level in math. So obviously, I think, you know, though we don't have any CAS scores, we can already kind of deduce that our math scores are going to be well below. I'm going to anticipate that they're going to be well below kind of state averages if we don't do anything. So hopefully, you know, some of the interventions that we're doing are going to make an impact. Unfortunately, we won't be able to assess that with CAS testing this year. So we will be getting this same diagnostic exam to students, and hopefully we will have students who have improved. And hopefully we have students who will have really made up some of those differences. So even if they're behind grade level, perhaps they've, you know, decrease the number of years that they are behind. So we should have some growth metrics over the summer that we can really, you know, create some, you know, data-driven interventions with next year. In terms of our graduation rate, we don't have a graduation rate. However, I did personally go through and take a look at the students who are graduating this year. It looks like we're going to have approximately a little less than 50% graduation rate this year for our class of 2020. And I really wanted to dig deep into those numbers because we're a small school and it's our first year of operation. So you can see here in the narrative here that we have two students from class of 2008. They're both going to graduate. We have five students from class of 2019. Three out of five of those students are going to graduate. And then of the 27 students in class of 2020, only 13 of those are slated to graduate, and we've got a couple who we really need to give that final push. But of the 14 who are not on track to graduate, 100% of those students entered CalPAC behind in credits. And you can see kind of how far behind they are. I mean, we have one student who already dropped out. Hopefully we can get that student to enroll in another program next year. We do follow up with all of our dropouts once a month, actually, to see whether or not they want to reengage here or whether we can get them to engage elsewhere or to get more statistics on whether they are working on a GED or have done anything else. Like that. But you can see even like 30% of these students are two or more years behind. So it's actually, I want to say maybe even a little bit worse right now than I anticipate it'll be in the future. We inherited quite a lot of students who are significantly credit deficient from the A3 schools who closed. Their students were a bit of a mess. So, and even like the 10th, 11th, the current 10th and 11th graders are significantly behind in credits. So we've really got to take a look at things and get creative with some of these students because we have inherited quite a problem. So I think we can get creative. I think we can create some solutions, but our graduation rate is slated to be low for a little while. Hopefully we can attract more students and we can really work with these kids to get on those credits quicker. So, in regards to Moana's presentation, while we don't receive CSI funds now, I do anticipate, based on these results and what I see even coming through the pipeline in our class of 2021 and class of 2022, it is possible that we will qualify in the future. So we'll see. In terms of college and career readiness, again, I broke it down, and only two students of those 27 students who are class of 2020 this year will complete A to G requirements. Another barrier that we're coming up against with the A3 schools is the UC Office of the President stripped A3 of their A to G status, like retroactively, which I've never seen them do before. So even the students, again, who are like in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, we're going to have some barriers in terms of A to G completion. I'm well aware that we can get CTE and community college dual enrollment, things like that, to meet the college and career indicator, but we're going to be up against it for a couple of years. We're going to have to get creative, which we will do, but that is a concern of mine currently at this time. In terms of chronic absenteeism, I ran our report. We're at about 23.9 chronically absent students. Again, chronically absent is missing 10% or more of the instructional days. So we've done, we've tried really, really hard in this area. To give you some perspective, the other two schools that we run are running above 30%. So we do actually, we are doing a little bit better in this particular population. And I do think that that's because we've started out with very stringent requirements in terms of attendance. Eric has done a wonderful job with chronic absenteeism and really focusing on students. One of the things that we've noticed with the policy that we have is that we kind of need to shorten the time frame. We start the warning almost too late. There's like 5 days, the students have missed 5 days, and then we start the warnings, and we're like, got to be sooner than that. So that's something that we learned this year. We're going to be tweaking our attendance policy to kind of ramp up a little faster so that we can catch these students before they already hit that 10%. So that's that area. Suspension rates, the good news is this is not an area of concern in our environment, and we're very unlikely to have a suspension or expulsion. It's not not out of the question, but very unlikely. We currently have 8 English learners in our program, and we are following up with them, and I do have some more information on English learners later in this presentation. So we continue to be dedicated to addressing the needs of our students. Our PLC, professional learning communities, for our teachers have been focused largely around the dashboard indicators and what we can do to address the needs of our students. And so, especially the underperforming student groups. So one of the things that we know is, for instance, that our students with disabilities are scoring particularly low in math. That's an area of concern. We know that our students with disabilities who are also English learners really need some attention. So we've already identified some areas that we really need to pay particular attention to, and we'll be definitely doing that. Another thing is our PLCs are kind of going to turn into committees. For